time of year where we get more rain than usual. I think we have three seasons according to Gurudeva. This is called the rainy cold season. We have the rainy this season, the rainy that season, and the rainy cold season. Three rainy seasons. And as we know, sometimes in January it gets very cold in the morning. So rain or water is very important. One of the testimonies to that is the Tirukkural. As you may recall, there's four chapters in the introduction to Tirukkural. First one is God, of course, right? Most important thing, God. After God, what does Tiruvallavar think is second in importance? Rain. You need rain to have life on earth, so particularly in South India, it's a bit fickle. You know, it comes just during the monsoon season. So rain is the second most important aspect of life on earth to Tiruvallavar. A third, of course, is Dharma. And fourth is sannyas. Four most important things there in the introduction. So we're very fortunate that when it comes to water, we live next to a river. And again, in the Tirukkural, even for a fortress, you need water. And for an ashram, of course, it's considered very important for an ashram to be near a sacred river. One of the problems of being somewhere for 30 plus years is it's easy to stop really seeing something. You know, you've been looking at it for 30 years. And the river is like that. In fact, all of the beauty that we see when we go outside here is like that. And we can stop really seeing it, stop really looking at it if we don't think about it. You know, we're walking along, going out for a walk, and we come back 30 minutes later, and what did we experience? Maybe our own thoughts. We didn't see anything. And there's a wonderful way of checking if you're seeing things. It's by being with children, because children see things. They're not so wrapped up in their own thoughts. So if you're walking along and the children are pointing out this, this, and this, and this, and you're not seeing it, you know, you're in your thinking mind. You're not really seeing what's there. You're not really appreciating what's there. You're taking it for granted. You're just walking along, living in your own thoughts. But it's worthwhile to stop and control our thoughts and to make sure we're really seeing what's there, listening to what's there, and enjoying what's there. So when it comes to the river, of course, in the spirit of the Tirukkural, it provides sustenance. And even on our own property here, though it looks like the river is down there and we're up here, if you go back upstream, you'll find that part of the river is diverted into the reservoir, slotted reservoir, and that reservoir provides the stream which goes through our property. So all the water that goes through the streams on our property is coming from the river, and it's providing both beauty for our Iravan Path of the Nayanars, as well as irrigation water for our crops and water for our cows. So the river provides us with sustenance. And on a very practical level, a level that everyone can understand, gives us a swimming hole. It's a great place to go swimming, particularly when it gets hot, and even some of our neighbors petition us during certain times of the year, oh, please, 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 you know, can't I bring my kids up swimming? But on a religious level, of course, it's much more important than that. When it comes to rivers, we have symbolism and sacredness to look at. So the classic symbolism regarding rivers and oceans is one of the soul merging with God, right? And this is found in the introduction to merging with Shiva. There's 9 ways to merge with Shiva given to us in the introduction to merging with Shiva. So if you haven't read that for a while, it's very worthwhile. So the last one, The last one has to do with the soul body merging into the primal soul. Of course, we know that's Vishvagrasa, the soul body merging into the primal soul. So the beauty of the ocean symbolism is it's easy to understand. You know, the process starts through evaporation. We have the water droplet coming out of the ocean, going into the clouds, coming down as rain, going down the river, going back into the ocean. And once it gets back into the ocean, where is it? You know, I mean, you can ask a child. The child can understand. You know, where is it? You know, where'd it go? Well, it became one with the ocean, right? I mean, you can't find it once it gets back in the ocean. It's just part of the entire ocean. You can't pull it out again. It's gone. It's become part of the whole. Not gone in the sense of disappeared, but gone in the sense of it has no more individual existence. It's become the whole. You can't distinguish it from the whole. So it's a beautiful symbolism that we have, and it's number 9 in our list of ways to merge with Shiva in dancing with Shiva. Looking for a moment at the sacredness of rivers, one of the concepts, and on our property, of course, we have just on a very small scale, a mini scale, the idea of Sangam. So usually when we say Sangam, we think of a group of people, right? Sangam. But Sangam also means where two rivers join, a Sangam. So those of you who have been to such places in India know that when two sacred rivers join, it's considered even more sacred than in each of them individually. So during where the Sangam is, you'll find very special bathing ghats there for religious bathing. And on our property, we have a mini Sangam, which is our Balihai Falls, where it meets the river. It has the same vibration as the Sangam. And if you go there and meditate, it has the sense that somehow, in this meeting of two rivers of water, devas are present. Extra devas are there that don't usually come along with a single body of water. But somehow the merging of two different bodies of water creates an unusual vibration. And it's like it's a special place in the inner world somehow. And you can sense extra devas there. And so it's a wonderful place for meditation on our property or in India for bathing and meditation as well. Another part of the river is you can watch and learn from it because it's life. And you can understand qualities about life by just watching the different events that take place in the river. So, for example, this time of year, you know, we can have some really strong rainstorms. And in the past, you know, we've looked out the window and in this pouring down rainstorm, what do you see coming down the river? You see entire trees coming down the middle of the river, bouncing along, bounce, 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 one after the other. Trees coming down the river. And you get all kinds of debris coming down the river. And because the river's high, it leaves the debris high on the shore. So if you go down there a couple days later, you'll find your shoreline high up is covered with all this debris. And the river is back down to its normal level. And you've got a mess, right? You've got a big mess. It takes forever to clean that up. So one of the monks one day, you know, I saw in that situation and I thought it was a very interesting approach. Still raining, but the river had come down. The monk was out there throwing the debris into the river while it was still nearby. So you just turn around and you throw it. Instead of having to walk 20 feet, which you'd have to do in a couple of days, you go out right away before it drops too much. It's just dropped enough so you can go down and easily clear this debris that the storm had brought up. Very interesting approach, right? So what does that mean? I mean, what can we learn from that? Well, we can learn that, you know, timing is important. And one of Gurudeva's wonderful qualities is that he's so much in the present, he's always ready to act. You know, lots of people don't want to act. They want to think about things. Well, let's think about it. Let's have a meeting. Let's discuss it. Let's sleep on it. You know, that wasn't Gurudev, of course. He said, well, let's do it. And everybody else would have to rush because they weren't quite ready. They weren't in the now as much as Gurudev. You know, let's do it now. Oops. Guess I should be careful what I bring up. We may end up doing everything right now. So, this little example of the river shows that timing is important in life. And that, you know, we can look at the debris as a difficult situation, some karma that's come to us, something unusual, something that's a bit hard to handle. And the lesson is, if we handle it right away, it may be much more efficient. If we're willing to be so much in the now that we say, well, how can we dispatch this right now? Instead of going back and feeling sorry for ourselves, which is the other reaction, we say, oh, what a mess. I feel so discouraged. I just cleaned that up last week. This is terrible. You know, we kind of sulk around for a few days. We miss the chance. But if we can look at it without becoming emotional about it, maybe if we react to this problem, this difficulty, immediately, we'll be able to dispatch it in a much more efficient way without it becoming a real problem to us. We had another storm recently. This one was this year. And it brought down this huge stump and dumped it right on the path, which sometimes happens. So you go down there and there's this huge stump. It's too big to lift. And if you want to do something, you have to call in someone to help. Usually we call in the Tongans. You know, you have Tongan friends. They come in with their chainsaws and spend half a day down there and cut it up and dispatch it. But this time, we didn't have a chance to do that. It came there and we tried to move it and it was too large. And then what happened? Another storm came one or two days later and took it away. It was the most amazing thing. It just vanished. We went down there and it was totally gone. Something that you wouldn't expect. So again, it shows you that life is not constant. That life has its ups and downs. It has its different moments. And to be attuned to them is advantageous. And to be out of tune with them, it's a lot harder, making things difficult that we could make easy. So if we can manage to stay attuned to the ebbs and flows of life, we can make our life smoother and more sublime. So all of that is what the river tells us. Very interesting. Ganga Sadhana. We all know Ganga Sadhana. And I'm sure, you know, I could ask anyone in the room to explain Ganga Sadhana. We all know it. Yes, we know we're sitting there with our leaves and our flowers, right? Right there on the river. Every time we have a thought, you know, we put it into the leaf, takes it away, and then we grab the flower and offer it to the river and in appreciation for the river taking the thought away, right? Ganga Sadhana. We're all experts at answering what Ganga Sadhana is. But again, it's something we can take for granted. Here we are next to this beautiful river with a beautiful spot for Ganga Sadhana. Are we really performing Ganga Sadhana frequently enough? Well, how do we know? What's the purpose of Ganga Sadhana? Well, the purpose of Ganga Sadhana isn't simply to put leaves and flowers in the river, of course. It's not even to listen to the river saying Om Namah Shivaya. It's to become attuned to the river, to become one with the river. And after we become one with the river is easy because it makes a noise. That's why Gurudev chose the river. There's a sound, so it catches your attention. It's roaring at you. You know, you're sitting there and this roar is there. You can't ignore it. It's even louder than your thoughts. It's roaring at you. So you become one with this roar by hearing it as Om Namah Shivaya. But we don't stop there, right? Once we become one with the river, we keep going. We become one with the river banks. We become one with the trees. We keep going, the sky, the mountain, everything we can see, we become one with nature. That's the spirit of Ganga Sadhana. So, how do we know if we would benefit from Ganga Sadhana? Well, it's an easy question to ask. Do we feel totally peaceful and totally content? We can ask ourselves that. At this very moment, am I totally peaceful and totally content? I'm just so happy and well-adjusted and uplifted and at peace with everything, no thoughts about the past, no thoughts about the future, no worries, no concerns, no misunderstandings that I recall. I'm just totally peaceful and content. Well, if we can say yes, then maybe we can skip Ganga Sadhana for today. You know, but if we can't say yes, we say, no, I'm not really totally peaceful. I'm kind of disturbed about this, kind of disturbed about that. No, I'm not really content because I wish things were different than they are. I wish this would be this way and that would be this way and this would be different. You know, if we answer like that, that means we can benefit from Ganga Sadhana. Definitely, we can benefit from it. So it's just like taking the idea of not seeing the river or listening to the river because we're taking it for granted a step deeper. We're taking Ganga Sadhana for granted. We know what it is. We know it's there. Because it's so accessible, we take it for granted and we don't use it enough. But it's such a profound practice and so simple. You know, it's something we should definitely avail ourselves of. Just like when we take a walk, we want to see what we are seeing, listen to what's out there, hear the birds, look at the flowers, and not just totally be involved in our own thoughts. Wonderful chapter in Merging with Shiva, chapter 4, called The River of Life. And Gurudeva gives us another symbolism for the river, that the water flowing through the river is our life force. It's a wonderful meditation. Gurudeva explains it as actinic force. Actinic force is not a force from the superconscious mind, rather it is the superconscious mind. So our pure life force, superconsciousness. And he likens that to the water that's flowing down the center of the river, like the central stream of the river. When you sit next to a river, particularly in areas where it's not super wide, but, you know, upstream like we are, you'll see a phenomena where water gets caught on the side. All the water doesn't go down the center. You know, you see water caught over here, there's a boulder. It's stuck behind a boulder. And unless the stream rises higher, it's going to remain stuck behind that boulder. Stuck behind the boulder because the water level has come down a little bit. So this water is stuck over there. It's not moving. We have water over here that's stuck because there's some logs that are blocking it. So the mainstream is going along, but we have water stuck here and there all along the river. So, what is the symbolism? Well, all of it is our energy. But the water that's flowing down the center of the river is like actinic force that's flowing through us without hindrance. Water that's stuck here and there is like attachments. It's our energy that's caught up in some kind of concern, usually about the past. We find ourselves reflecting on misunderstandings that occurred last year, or it could be about ourselves. Boy, that stupid thing we did 2 years ago. You know, we think about it every day. We haven't resolved it. But we can also be attached to the future. We can be worried about the future. Worried about losing our job. Every day we're worried. Gee, I might lose my job today. Or we're worried about how some business deal we're doing will work out. Not just thinking about it, but we're worried about it. Meaning we think about it more than we should. And we think about it with just part of our mind. When we think about the future correctly, our full mind is on it in a very organized way, and we're thinking it through. Worry is we're thinking it through just part way, and then we abandon it. That's what worry is. You just think about it a little bit, and then you jump to something else. You think about that a little bit, you jump to something else. Rather than taking the time to think it through carefully, make a conclusion, even write the conclusion down and say, this is what I'm going to do. I don't have to think about this again. That's planning for the future. Planning for the future is good. Worrying about the future is not good. It's like putting energy off to the side. We're tying up this energy instead of allowing it to flow with the main river of life. We're putting it against the side. It's like water stuck behind a big boulder. So you can just look at the river, imagine the Wailua River from the beginning to the end, and there's lots of water that's stuck behind boulders and rocks and branches and trees and everything. that are our attachments. So the more we can get rid of those, the more of our energy flows with the river of life, right? It's just in the mainstream. It's like when the river is high, all of the energy, I mean all of the water, flows in a stream. It's only when the river drops to a certain level that it starts to collect along the bank in various ways. So similarly in our life, if we have lots of inspiration, lots of actinic energy, lots of upliftment going, there's no attachments. It's when our energy level goes down, our inspiration goes down, that we get into the sense of attachments and worries about the future, concerns about the past. So, what's the goal? Well, in this symbolism, the goal is to get into the ocean. The ocean in this symbolism is not merging with Shiva, it's just Shiva consciousness. That if our energy flows straight, we can be in Shiva consciousness, which is the goal, blissful consciousness, consciousness of oneness. But if our energy is divided into all these little side pools of attachment, then we don't experience Shiva consciousness. So we need to let go of the attachments in a systematic way. How do we know if we've let go of the attachments? Well, we find ourselves in the present. When the actinic force is strong, when our superconscious force is strong, we're in the eternal now. Beautiful phrase, the eternal now. Meaning, we don't think much about the past. We're not worrying about the future. We're enjoying the present in a peaceful, contented way. That's the eternal now, and that's the goal. So a very simple measure is, you know, how much are we thinking about the past? How much are we worrying about the future? How much are we really in the present? Another measure is, how is life responding to us? How is our timing? Timing is a very good measure of how much we're in the eternal now. Is our timing good or is our timing bad? We call up someone, oh, they just left. You know? Do we call up someone, oh, they just came in? You know, how is our timing? You know, one incident isn't enough, but if that happens throughout the day, you can judge, you know, how your timing is. Are you really attuned to life or are you out of sync with life? Are you banging into it? Things are not going smoothly. You really want to talk to someone, but someone calls you. Oh, you know, that's a good sign that life is, you're in tune with life, that you're flowing with your superconscious. So, if you find you're not flowing with your superconscious, you don't have to give up. Say, uh-oh, this is going to be a terrible day. Everything's going to go wrong. Maybe I should go back to bed. Call in sick. No. Stop at the temple. Do a Ganesha Puja. Meditate. Do something to change your consciousness. Because it's within your power. It just has to do with the state of mind you're in. It's not some fate that's external to you that you can't change. My fate today, my astrology of the day is everything's going to go wrong. No. Is that somehow you're not in your best state of consciousness. Something's distracted you. Something's disturbed you. Maybe you need to write it down and burn it up. You know, give some thought. Why am I not in my best state of consciousness? If these kinds of things start happening to you, write it down, burn it up. Change your consciousness. Get rid of the attachment. Get more energy flowing through you and not tied up in attachments. And then life responds in a smooth way. So all of that is about water. Isn't it wonderful how much we can learn from water and rivers and symbols and sacredness and swimming holes and sustenance? Om Namah Shivaya.